When my daughter was younger, she used to set up a Barbie house. And she put everything in just the right place, and she made sure the furniture and the cars and the outside and the house and everything was set up just right. It took her about 45 minutes every time to set it up, and I would walk in and there would still be no Barbies involved. And I said, "Carice, you're missing something." And she said, "You got to get it right, Dad." At the end of Genesis chapter 1, it's kind of like that. The whole planet is set up and ready to go, but there are no people. Genesis 1:27 says, "So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it.'" The thing God wanted was that people that looked like him were all over the globe. But those first people made some choices that left them looking less and less like God until they got to the point where it looked nothing at all like what God intended, so he sent the flood. And at the end of that catechism from space, a family who trusted God, who kind of looked like him, got out of the ark. And in Genesis 9, it says, "Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, 'Be fruitful, increase in number, and fill the earth.'" Same thing. God wanted people all over the earth who looked like him. But those people also eventually made bad choices, and they holed up in a tower near the town of Babel. And in Genesis 11, it says, "Then they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth.'" Huh. That's what God wanted them to do. And they're working on doing the exact opposite, at which point God said, "You people are not very good with verbal instructions. So I will send a guy. And through him, the world will finally be filled with people who like me and are like me." God said in Genesis 12 to Abram, he said, "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So God gives Abraham a family and grows them and protects them and teaches them and blesses them until finally they're ready for God to send the guy that he promised was coming. And Jesus arrives. Finally, majesty arrives, and he lives here, and he dies here, and he comes back to life here, and then he makes the church. And the church's purpose, our one job, same, to fill the earth with people like God. Jesus said in Mark chapter 16, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. Whoever does not believe will be condemned." I heard a guy saying, "The only way to tell if something is good or not good is to look at its purpose. If something is accomplishing its purpose, it's good. If it's not accomplishing its purpose, it's not good." For example, let's talk about watches. There's been a lot of talk this week about watches. And like Mr. Odell Beckham Jr., I have a 250 watch. Not a $250,000 watch, but I do have a nice 250 Timex watch. Is the watch I have a good watch or a bad watch? Well, it depends. What's its purpose? If you want the watch to tell time, I have a very good watch. If you want my watch to serve as a parachute, should you need a parachute and all you have is my watch, it is definitely not a good watch for you. If you wanted to use my watch as a hammer, probably you would do better with Mr. Beckham's watch. But if you need to know the time, I have a good watch. We can only determine if something is good or bad by its intended purpose. So, question, what did Jesus make a church to do? Answer, fill the world with people like God. So how are we doing? Well, there are more people like God in the world today than ever before. More people have become followers of Jesus in the past 100 years than did in the first 1900 years. Of this era. For example, there were 9 million Christians in Africa in 1900. There were 9 million. Now there are 500 million Christians in Africa. For example, in China in 1949, there were 1 million Christians. Now in China, there are 100 million Christians in spite of the severe persecution. So that's good. In the world, there are more and more people who look like God. In America, there are fewer and fewer people that look like God. And that's bad. So this month, we're looking at the 5 things that we can do better to do our one job better. And the first one is, the first thing we need to do better is to connect with people. No, really, this is a spiritual thing. Hang out with people. Be with people. Be where they are. Connect with people. That is the first thing that people who follow Jesus have to do if we're going to do good in the world. To fulfill our purpose of filling the earth with people like God, we have to be where the people are. From the very beginning, Jesus made it clear that this was the key. In Matthew chapter 5, it says, Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." Jesus said, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house." He said, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Salt is only good when it's added. It can certainly add goodness. You can put salt on your steak. You can put salt on your baked potato. Have you ever put salt on watermelon? It's delicious. You got to try it. Salt helps. It makes things taste better. But it is almost completely ineffective at seasoning food when it's still in the shaker. Flashlights, for instance, are very helpful, but they are almost completely useless when you are in the dark woods if your flashlight is back in the tent. You have to be present if you want to add something helpful in life. Okay, by popular request, this is the portion of the sermon where we talk about football. And today we are going to talk about an undefeated team. Because this morning we still can. Football. Do you hear about the guy from Europe who came over and watched his first American football game ever recently? He watched the whole thing, and when it was done, they asked him what he thought. He said, "That was fascinating." He said, "You have combined the two worst elements of America in one game." And people said, "What? What are you talking about?" He said, "Football is violence and committee meetings." So let's talk about an undefeated football team, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Nick Saban was talking to his team before the semifinals in the college playoffs in 2015. Number one, Alabama, was set to play number four, Ohio State, and everybody knew Alabama was going to win. Everybody knew that, except for Eric. But everybody mostly knew that Alabama was going to beat Ohio State. Alabama players were already looking ahead to the championship game the following week. So all week long before that first game, Nick Saban told his team, "Be where your feet are." Be where your feet are. And what he meant was, don't be thinking about next week's game. Focus on this game. Play this opponent. Be here, because this is where we are. Here is where we are. But his players did not. And they got upset by the Buckeyes, who eventually went on to win the championship game. Alabama did not win in 2015 because they were not where their feet were. Paul, who's one of the greatest guys ever at doing God's one thing, wrote to a bunch of Christians at Rome. He said, "For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But how can they call on one they haven't believed in? And how can they believe in one of whom they haven't heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can anyone preach unless they're sent?" Paul says, as it's written, "How beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." Paul says, and this is weird, Paul says God thinks the feet of Christians on mission are the most attractive feet around, because those feet are where they need to be. Do you remember the scene in the Holy Grail where Arthur and Bedivere and Lancelot and Galahad are watching as the French soldiers are dragging the giant wooden rabbit into the fort? And Sir Arthur says, "Okay, now tell me again, what happens?" And Bedivere says, "Well, Lancelot and Galahad and I wait for nightfall, and then we leap out of the rabbit, taking the French by surprise, totally unarmed." And Arthur thinks about that for a minute. He goes, "Who's going to leap out of that rabbit?" And Bedivere says, "Well, Lancelot and Galahad and I all are going to wait for nightfall. And then we're..." And then they realize the Trojan rabbit plan is not going to work because they're not in it. Your feet actually have to be in the French fort if you're going to capture the French fort. And folks, when Nick Saban and Monty Python and the Apostle Paul all agree, it must be true. We got to be with people if we're going to help people. I say all that because sometimes churches strangely seem to think otherwise. There was a popular teaching when I was growing up that called for Christians to be holy. And I don't mean holy like God is holy. I don't mean pure, good-hearted, unselfish at the core. I mean holy like set apart, distinct from, not contaminated by, Amish. We're starting to make up our own stuff back then. We had suddenly Christian bookstores everywhere and Christian music everywhere and Christian radio stations. And we were told that if we did not come out of the world and be separate from evil, we were evil. They said I could not go to dances or go to parties because if I was there with all those pagans, I would lose all self-control. They told me that I had to burn my records because I would find satanic messages if I played them backwards. I could never make that work. Could you? Did you ever make that? I couldn't. They said I couldn't go to the colleges, universities, because I would lose my faith if I went there. It mostly seemed to me like they were saying the only safe place for me to be in the world was in a church building. John Stott calls it rabbit hole Christianity, where Christians mostly stay underground, and they occasionally pop out of their Christian safe zones, and they do something religious, and they scurry back to their safe zone. And it's important to have people around you with whom you can debrief and study and be encouraged by. It's God's plan for you to be part of a congregation that will help you grow and serve and help you pay attention to what matters in life. But in terms of our purpose as a church, we have to be where people are that we're trying to help, or we can't help them. Our job is to connect with people where they are. And I know that because that's what Jesus did. But if you try that, you can get a lot of heat from other Christians who think that's dangerous. That's a dangerous plan. And that is not a new idea that it's a dangerous plan, because Jesus had his critics who said the same thing. Do you remember when in Matthew chapter 9 it says, as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. And Jesus told Matthew, follow me. Do you remember what Matthew did? He got up and followed him. Jesus is still putting together his group of guys here. He's picked out several guys so far. They're hanging out with him. They're traveling with him. They're watching him, learning from him. And as they're going somewhere along the way, Jesus sees Matthew, a guy sitting in a tax booth, in a toll booth. And his guys with Jesus start muttering, "Rassin, frassin, Texan, jerk. Can't stand him. He takes our money, the jerk. Works for the government, jerk." In order to understand how tax collectors were viewed back then, you probably best try today to think of, tax collectors. Do you know people who work for the IRS? No. People who get rich because they work for the IRS? That's pretty much what they thought of Matthew, selling out his countrymen for his own profit. Nobody liked tax collectors. Nobody hung out with tax collectors. Nobody took selfies with tax collectors back then. Nobody friended tax collectors on Facebook, except Jesus. Jesus wanted to be Matthew's friend. He liked Matthew, and apparently Matthew liked Jesus, because when Jesus said, follow me, Matthew did. Matthew, in fact, said, I'd love to. Thanks. Where are we going to go? And Jesus said, how about to your house? I'm kind of hungry. So Matthew took Jesus and all his guys back to his house, and then he had a huge cookout. In Matthew 9, it says, while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked Jesus' disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? The only people Matthew knows on a social level were other tax collectors and outcasts, and he wants to throw a party, so he invites all his friends. So Jesus is at a party where the music is blasting and the beer is flowing and the jokes are pretty raunchy. None of these people at this party have been inside a church building ever. I heard of a guy who was new to this whole God thing, new part of the church, and when he heard that WWJD means what would Jesus do, he laughed and laughed and laughed. And the other Christians there said, why are you laughing? He said, I always thought that meant we want Jack Daniels. Those are the kind of people who were at Matthew's party that day. And the religious police were standing around watching Jesus and said, ah, caught ya. There's alcohol here. There's smoking here. There's dancing here. There's swearing here. Bad company corrupts good character. Birds of a feather flock together, Jesus. You are at a bad party, really bad. Therefore, you, Jesus, are really bad. And Jesus looked at those guys. He said, are you kidding me? He said, this is exactly where I need to be. Jesus said, don't you know that God wants people like him everywhere in the world? And you can't help people unless you're where they are. You got to connect. Jesus said in Matthew 9, on hearing this, he said, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I haven't called to call the righteous, but sinners. I read a stat recently. It said when people have been Christians for about 7 years, they typically have no non-Christian friends. And how are we going to help people who don't know Jesus if we don't know them? Jesus connected with people where they were, and that wasn't always kosher. But for God's purposes, it was always good. Jesus liked hanging out with people. People liked hanging out with Jesus. I heard a famous theologian one time say, this was a quote, I thought it was pretty good. The quote is, well, I heard Jesus, he drank wine, and I bet we'd get along just fine. He could calm the storm and heal the blind, and I'd bet he'd understand a heart like mine. Yeah, that's from famous theologian Miranda Lambert. And do not ask me how I know that. But for Jesus to connect with people and to do that, he had to be where they were. The Bible records Jesus running into people and having a conversation with them 34 times. How many of those happened in a church building? One. All the rest were wherever they met. Like the one Clint read for us, John chapter 4. Jesus met the woman at the local watering hole. Only in that case, it was actually a hole where they could get water. Did you hear about the guy who looked out his back window one morning? He saw three deep holes where had just been dug there overnight. And he said, well, well, well. To meet the woman at the well, Jesus had to go to the well because that's where the woman was. That's her name, the woman at the well. Wherever you go, if your feet are there, you see people around you, that's your place. Start there. Connect. One piece of doing what we are called to do as Christians is to connect with people. If I were to ask you today to name your neighbors by name, how far up and down the street could you go? Not last name. I want first names. How many houses can you go before you don't know? Nicknames are fine. Maybe some of you live out in the country. Maybe your houses are far apart. Maybe you just moved to your new place. Okay, how about at school? How many classmates, how many teachers can you name who know your name? How about at work, in your office building, down the hall, up the stairs, around the office? All those people, how many of their names do you know? Because, see, if we don't know their names, it is unlikely you'll get a chance to tell them his. Reality number one, we need to be connected to people if we're going to help people. This is a spiritual thing, folks. Some people are gifted at this. I mean, they are. God has given them a gift at doing this. Some people can just do this. 10 days ago, we had all 340 Victor kindergartners. Do you know that there are that many this time? 340 kindergartners rode a school bus for the first time, and their parents went with them, and they all rode from our sidewalk over to the school. Now, I don't know if you know, but our parking lot fits about 75 cars, and at 9:30, there were 100 cars looking for a place to park. And at 11 o'clock, there were another 100 cars looking for a place to park. The problem was the second 100 cars arrived before the first 100 cars was left, so there was nowhere to park. So for a mile up and down High Street and a mile down Willowbrook, on both sides of the road, there were cars and parents and kindergartners standing around trying to get to our parking lot, trying to get to our sidewalk, trying to get on a bus. For a couple hours that day, parents and kids stood in line on our sidewalk, in the grass, all over our parking lot. But Jason and Amber Somerville had experienced this before when Mackenzie was going to kindergarten. So this year they came back, and they brought their other daughter with them, and they brought water bottles, and they brought lollipops. And Jason and Amber walked up and down, and Reagan walked up and down those lines and greeted each family that was standing there that day. They offered treats to the kids. They offered assurances to worried parents. They offered an invitation to come and be part of our church. I heard him say over and over, Jason, oh, yeah, this is our church. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's our preacher over there. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you ought to come. Yeah, you ought to. And with an overcrowded and totally unsafe parking situation for 4 hours, it could have left bad tastes in people's mouths. But with the kindness and the joy and the positivity of the Somerville family, people left that day smiling. Some people are just really good at connecting with other people. For instance, Joe Luna will sometimes be in a long and deep conversation with someone at a store. And after he's done, Heather Lee will ask her husband, who is that? And Joe will say, I have no idea. It reminds me of the girl who always talked on the phone for hours with her friends. She always talked for hours. Every conversation just lasted so long. And one day she got a call and she talked for 25 minutes and then she hung up. And her father, who was in the same room, was very surprised. And he said, "Well, who was that?" And she said, "Oh, that was a wrong number." Some people have a gift at connecting with other people. But we all have the ability to connect with some people. God gives us chances to connect. And if we're going to make the most of our lives, we need to work on this skill. Even if we're not good at it, we need to do this because we can't help people that we're not talking with. About 5 years ago, a friend of mine said something that really convicted me. He said he thought Christians should have to join golf leagues. And I said, "What? You don't even like golf." He said, "Fine, they should have to join bowling leagues or volleyball leagues or some kind of leagues." He said, "I don't care what league, we just need to get out there more." And I thought about that and I decided to get in on a league. And at the time, I didn't really know pickleball too well, but I was at the Y and I saw people playing and I walked in and I asked if I could play. And now, 5 years later, I have made an acquaintance with several hundred people that I can name. I can usually only name their first name because it has most of them introduce themselves. But I have deliberately introduced myself as John Walker to every person I've met over the past 5 years every time. And I have encouraged people and cheered for people and partnered with people and connected with people. We've talked about pickleball techniques and the weather and the bills and aging and kids and politics and movies and love languages. And I've had a chance to help people along the way. When one lady fell and broke her humerus bone, which was not, I went with her and her partner to the hospital, and I stayed with them both in ER, and I prayed with them, and I delivered messages back home for them all day long. Once I went to testify on behalf of one of my pickleball friends who got arrested for disorderly conduct on a flight back to Rochester. One 84-year-old man told me about when he came from China to America to work at Xerox, and how he's lived here for 50 years, and how he just beat stomach cancer. I have gone to funerals of some of the people that I've played pickleball with. I have almost been present at births. Once my dad was rushed from the nursing home into the hospital, so our family spent an unexpected day in Highland ER, and I got a text that day from a pickleball friend who told me that another pickleball player had just given birth that day. We'd been waiting for Katie to give birth, and she'd just given birth, and I texted back, "Which hospital?" And when I found out it was in Highland, I went upstairs, and I was the first person in the world, other than the doctors and nurses and the mother and father, to see and hold Edwina Curtis. And I gave her mom a birthday present. It was M&M's, peanut M&M's. I'm pretty sure Edwina couldn't eat them, but I'm sure Katie enjoyed them. Now, on a pickleball court, there's lots of swearing, even after they know I'm a preacher, and the humor is sometimes just a little south of my days when I worked for the highway department, but a watch is only good if it tells time, and God's people are only good if we're connecting. So I'm trying, finding a way to create meaningful connections with people in life. How about let's work this week on connecting with people? As a spiritual activity, notice the people around you. Meet them. If you see a neighbor in the driveway and you don't know their name, go over and introduce yourself. Ask them what they think of Clemson or something. If somebody new comes to your school or your workplace, be the first person to say hello. If you're working out and you need a spotter, ask somebody you don't know to help you and talk with them. Take advantage of opportunities this week where your feet are to meet and greet someone, wherever, whoever. Did you hear about the guy whose life got completely turned off when the power went out due to a storm? He said, "I couldn't watch ESPN or CNN. I couldn't ask Google to play something for me. I couldn't use my computer for work. My phone battery needed charging. My Kindle was dead. I couldn't play Xbox. I literally had nothing to do." He said, "So I went in, I sat down at the kitchen table, and I talked to my wife for 2 hours. He said, "She seems nice." Meet somebody. The matter of being what God wants our church to be starts with us connecting with people, connecting with Him, connecting with our family, connecting with those around us. But it's so important that you don't be weird. I'm not asking you to be weird. Please don't think weird. Just be nice and talk to people.
Be interested in people. Listen to what they say. Ask them questions from whatever information they give you. Pay attention when they're talking. Look them in the eyes. Respond. Connect. Don't be afraid of what might go wrong in the conversation. Just be adventuresome. People are fascinating. Show interest. And if it goes wrong, okay, I think we don't connect because sometimes we're afraid it might go badly. Sometimes it will. Just smile. It's okay. Did you hear about the lady who was riding the bus and she noticed a young man was staring at her? They were both holding onto the same pole, but he was just staring at her until he finally said, "Excuse me, this is my stop." And she was kind of confused because she wasn't blocking his way, and she said, "Well, then go ahead." And he said, "Well, this is my pole." And the lady had no idea what he was talking about until the guy added, "I just bought this pole at the hardware store to hold up my shower curtain." And she let go, and with that, he picked up his pole and carried it off the bus. Sometimes interactions with people don't go the way we think that they're going to go. But we still need to keep on trying to connect with more people. I'm no longer a slave to fear. I'm a child of God, so we press on. We connect. Because if we can't do that, we can't have any influence in the world. You can't help people you're not talking with. So meet people. Don't cloister yourself away in your house. Don't avoid social occasions. Go to parties. I'm telling you, be a good Christian and go to parties this week. Now, do not go to places that are dumb. Don't go to places you can't handle. If you're a recovering alcoholic, don't go to the Thirsty Turtle this week every night and say, "Well, John told me I'm supposed to be here." If you're a recovering sex addict, don't go to Hooters. Don't hook up with some old high school flame on Facebook. I'm so tired of that. Don't go to places you shouldn't be. But Jesus invited Matthew into his life. And Matthew invited Jesus to his party. And Jesus went. And they connected. And how did that all work out in the end? Well, do you know what book we were reading from most of this sermon today? Yeah, Matthew. He wrote the book on how Jesus connects with people. Matthew is the one who wrote down what Jesus said about salt and light and letting people see our good deeds so that they can glorify our Father in heaven. Can you see why that mattered so much to Matthew? Here's hoping that Willowbrook can help a whole bunch more Matthews get in this week. Let's pray.